So today is August 18th, 2016. My name is Rob Mason, and I'm the student coordinator for the Allard Law History Project. Joining me today is the Honorable Stephen Owen. Welcome, Mr. Owen.
Thank you. Good to be here. Stephen is fine.
Stephen, okay. So before we get into your history in the legal profession and in public service, I want to ask what motivates you? What have you tried to accomplish in your career?
Well, I guess the central theme is good public policy. And I've sort of been banging away at that, sometimes successfully, sometimes less so, over the years in different roles.
Yeah.
But what really motivates me is our three young grandchildren, ages 2, 3, and 4. So they're two mothers. So.
Does that give, I imagine that gives you a longer-term perspective on public policy.
It certainly does, yeah. Good point.
When were they born?
Well, they're 2, 3, and 4 now. So
very recent then.
Yeah. Of our two sons and their wives, and they all wandered away to different ends of the earth, and they all came home, so they're all living in Vancouver, so we're blessed.
Great. So let's go back and talk a little bit about your family background, since you mentioned your family. Were there any particular experiences in your childhood that led you to law or to public service?
Well, certainly my father was a lawyer, and my uncle, and so there's sort of a lot of law in the family.
Yeah.
My father died in an air crash when I was 4 or 5, so that sort of stood there as an image, I think, in my life growing up as something that was good to aspire to, and that followed through, and it turned out to be true.
So, growing up, did you have any part-time jobs or extracurriculars that you were involved in?
I always had summer jobs in high school, and I worked at Camp Neowen when I ran the Xerox machine, when the Xerox was a brand new thing. It was probably the size of this room at the time.
Wow.
When I was about 14.
Yeah.
And in the old Camp Neowen, Murphy Neowen firm. And then I actually articled at Owen Bird for a year.
Okay.
Spent a year with them in practice and a year in articling. So those were sort of direct law. I went from at Owen Bird, which was, as was Camp Lee Murphy by then, both big in maritime law and international law.
Mm.
And so I really got caught the bug of maritime law.
So when did you first decide then that you wanted to pursue law?
I don't know. In the imaginations and stories of a 10-year-old, somebody might say, you know, I used to play at it there. But, law was in the family, and I think when I went to undergraduate at UBC, and I went into law school, I decided to go into law in third year. I went after third year instead of fourth year.
Yeah.
You still do that then.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just carried on.
So what were you studying when you were in your undergrad?
Economics and history.
Mm-hmm.
And math, I sort of did a bit of everything. But.
And did you feel that that was a good preparation for law school?
Certainly the rigors of any academic work, I think, are good preparation.
Yeah.
I don't, there wasn't anything in particular directly related by subject, but certainly I was interested enough in studying and to get into law school after 3 years. So.
And were you set on UBC in particular because you'd done your undergrad there?
Yeah. I was playing rugby here too for the Thunderbirds, and so I really wanted to stay on that. And so I went in a year early, but my brother is 2 years older than I, and I've never quite been satisfied with UBC's treatment of medicine students as opposed to law students, because he went into medicine after 3rd year, and when he got his MD, they gave him his BSc as well, automatically. And when I went to law school a year early, they didn't do that when I got the LLB. So I always felt a little put out on that.
Yeah.
My brother never lets me forget.
But you went on to do another degree. You did the LLM then after... Was that immediately after law school? Or
what did I do? Did I article first? I articled first.
Okay.
And got really interested in maritime law
yeah.
at that point. And so when I wanted to carry on in that field. The University College London, University of London, had probably the best maritime law of the sea program in the world then. Three of the top people in the world were at UCL, so that was a wonderful place to go.
And what was it that attracted you to maritime law in particular?
Well, I guess when I was articling, and I got to really get introduced to maritime law because the firm was very big in that.
Right.
And just, you know, interviewing captains and things on freighters coming in that had had collisions or cargo damage, and just had a very international, romantic view to it that seemed to be interesting, and so that was something I wanted to carry on with.
So jumping back to UBC, what were your first impressions of the law school? You mentioned you were in the Army Huts for part of your first year.
First year was Army Huts. Well, the first impression, yes, was the leaking roof, full of rains.
Yeah.
But it was, I must say, I didn't really become a very serious law student until later on. I'd gone in after third year and thought that was a neat thing to do. I was, not to be too facetious about it, but I was playing rugby, chasing the wonderful young woman who became my wife, still is, and enjoying UBC.
Other priorities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they were all priorities.
Yeah.
There's lots of time for everything. But I enjoyed law.
Yeah. So when you started to delve more deeply in the subject matter, what was the what were the courses that sort of inspired you in law school?
Well, actually, Jack Cunningham, who became was then one of the leading maritime lawyers in the city, taught maritime law. And I think it was the first time it was taught, and I took that in second year, I guess, and found that fascinating.
Right.
And criminal law as well.
Yeah.
That was sort of the other real interest, and I took a prison law course in my third year, I guess, and part of the, and they're only about, there's a seminar course, but a dozen of us, and part of the exercise was that, I think about three at a time, but spread out, they actually booked us into Riverview Hospital.
Really?
You know, we were behind, we were locked in, we were, there were no, we weren't tied up, but it was fascinating. We went to T groups and viewed some electric shock therapy, which is pretty chilling.
And, wow.
But that was a real fascinating look into
And was that more side. More of a policy-oriented course?
It was, but it had this real practical aspect to it as well, of spending a few nights in Riverview.
Yeah.
But that was pretty interesting. Michael
Jackson.
Jackson, yeah. He was our prison law prof.
Right.
Gosh, I haven't seen him in a while.
Yeah, I think he might still teach that course occasionally.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, his hair, he was very exotic. He was only about a year or two older than we were. And he just arrived from England.
Right.
And he had hair down here. This was, late 60s.
Right.
So it was very early 70s, very appropriate. Drove a red XKE. So this was, caught a lot of attention.
Right.
But anyway, he gave his prison law seminar, which was sort of fun. I took criminal law from him as well.
Right. Interesting.
Anyway.
So, in your career, you've held a wide range of positions in law and public service, probably more than we have time to get into in detail. But briefly, they range from Ombudsman of BC to Deputy Attorney General in BC, a number of federal cabinet positions. Throughout your career, what would you say has been the most rewarding position that you've held?
I really like change, which sort of, I guess, explains my wandering around a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I've enjoyed everything.
I
really have. But I really enjoy change as well. So, the longest was 6, the shortest was 2, and the average is about 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
But I Yeah, no, I've really enjoyed change. Law has always been, you know, a sort of central focus of everything I've done, even if it wasn't termed exactly that.
Sure.
And that's really what's really fascinated me on the public policy side is the legal side of it.
Mm-hmm. So would you say that there's consistent issues that have been consistent throughout your career? Or
No.
No?
No. No, I got dug into international law for a period.
Right.
And then that was sort of, interest was really repeated or reflected in a number of roles along the way. Certainly getting into politics, that was a big part of that role.
Right.
But I've loved international law. I love law. I love public policy. And they've sort of always followed me along, or I followed them.
I imagine if you're seeking change as often as you have in your career, sometimes you don't. I guess what I'm asking is, could you talk about some of the disappointments that you might have had along the way, some of the non-successes?
Well, I'm sure that there are many people who could call more than one of them unsuccessful. From my point of view, there's nothing I didn't enjoy.
Right.
I mean, the shortest job I had, I guess, was 2 years, and that was a term at 2 years in Africa. And I left there because my wife and I did that together, and it was a 2-year term. And
right.
But boy, that was a highlight of our professional lives.
And what made that a highlight?
Adventure.
Yeah.
We were young. We were married when we were 21 and 22, and both still at UBC. So I was in third year law, and she did fifth year ed.
Okay.
And then we were early 20s. We weren't ready to have kids. We weren't ready to join the middle class, and Africa just was looming large in world events and at the time. So we basically probably had too much wine to drink one night and went down and signed up for CUSO in the morning. But spinning dreams.
Yeah.
But no, that was a wonderful, wonderful adventure. I mean, I think we both look back at that. And I think we've always had a close marriage, but that was a real unifier as well, because, you know, we're in a small, distant, remote village, and you really depend on each other. And
so what sort of work were you doing when you were there?
We were both teaching.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a secondary school, a residential secondary school.
Okay.
That was way off in this bush area. But a lot of the secondary schools that were set up in northern Nigeria were in remote areas and close to villages. But so we had just two wonderful years there, and I think couples that go to Africa on those sorts of jaunts, they either don't make it together or they become closer for the rest of their lives. To really depend on each other.
Yeah.
So that was a
that worked out.
I guess we, by the time we headed home, Diane was starting to feel a little maternal, and so then we started having two kids.
Right. So at what point did you start thinking about getting into politics as a candidate?
Well, I guess I'd been asked to run a couple of times when I was doing other roles.
Yeah.
And the, I don't remember how that finally came up. That was, I guess, the first I ran in 2000 first. Or maybe it was 99, maybe the election was, might have been just before Christmas or just after.
Okay, yeah.
But, I had, remember exactly what I was doing when it, but why that? Oh, I was teaching law at UVic at the time.
Okay, yeah.
And my wife was running an international language school there. And we loved Victoria, and our kids had gone to high school there. But I'm trying to remember what was the motivating event.
Yeah. Well, you said you were asked a number of times before Why did you say no initially? Why was the time right? It wasn't right.
And the kids were at home for one thing.
Sure.
After we'd been in Victoria about 4 or 5 years, the kids were now off to the four corners. We were sort of ready for a move. Mm-hmm. And so we, last time we asked, we said yes. And it was just a real whirlwind. Matter of fact, it was before, it was about 5 weeks, no, 5 weeks of the election time, just a couple of weeks before the election was called. Mm-hmm. In the fall of 2000, and by circumstances I won't talk about the details of, but the incumbent, it was a Liberal incumbent here, mm-hmm. Decided not to run.
Okay.
And all of a sudden there was a vacancy.
Right.
In Vancouver Quadra, which is where I was born and grown up, and mm-hmm. A number of fast-moving discussions took place, and all of a sudden, we were still living in Victoria, but all of a sudden, we were in the middle of a 5-week election campaign. Hmm. It was literally within 2 weeks before the election was called. So that was a real whirlwind, but we'd sort of made quick decisions before, and I'd say the kids had left home by then.
Yeah.
So it just seemed like a neat adventure. Diane's was working for an international language school, and she was doing a lot of it by correspondence, and she could do a lot of it from, as it turned out,
from
she was
Ottawa.
Able to turn it into something she could do from Ottawa for a while.
So obviously you had a lot of experience in public policy and in academics, did you have experience in the political side of
No.
Yeah.
Actually, it was... That's right. I think it was a couple of weeks before the election was called, and it was all coming forward. And we had a meeting downtown at one of the big hotels, and to sort of announce my candidacy. And someone from the media said, well, you know, Stephen, how long have you been a member of the Liberal Party? And I actually wasn't at the time. I may remember in a moment the actual circumstances, but it was a bit of a dodge, someone handed me a application form, and I handed them $20 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Right in that meeting, and it was meeting the breakfast meeting before going into this first news conference, and literally, I signed up at the breakfast table for breakfast and gave them $20, and I was an instant member.
Right.
And walked into this thing, and I was a member.
Right.
Nobody asked how long.
Since this morning. So what would you say has been, what are some of your proudest accomplishments throughout your career?
Politics or in general?
Whatever comes to mind. Yeah. Politics would be a good start.
Sure. I guess the both most dramatic and threatening, and also I guess probably important role was as when Paul Martin made me Minister of Public Works, Government Services, and it was just as the sponsorship scandal was about to hit.
Right.
And that had been all under previous prime minister's mm-hmm. mandate and minister. But it was, we knew it was coming, and it was just about to go viral. Mm-hmm. And he made me public works minister, basically, to handle that crisis and the whole sponsorship thing. So that was certainly the most dramatic political event, and most important because it was a time when government was really under the microscope and gun. Because it was, it had been going on for a few years under the previous Liberal government. It was pretty unsavory. It hadn't been known.
Mm-hmm.
It had been in this, you know, pretty secretive operation in the Public Works Department. And so, Paul Martin asked me to take over Public Works to deal with sponsorship, and it was a really fascinating ministry too. I mean, it's next to the armed forces. It was the biggest budget in government, and much larger bureaucracy than the armed forces. So it was a fascinating job. You know, for everything from naval shipyards in Victoria to I guess it was sponsorship, but it was also the, I'd been involved earlier with, that was a different, in a different role, but in the working with the armed forces in the, the killing of Shireen Adrone in Somalia,
right.
And I had been one of the investigators. There were three of us who were appointed by the, I guess it was Jean Chrétien's government at the time, but to, no, it was, it wasn't, it was Kim Campbell's government,
right.
And to go, and we were basically 5 weeks on site in Somalia investigating this horrid murder by the airborne, a little cell of the airborne had committed, and that was probably the most interesting project I've worked on. But I've done a few for Amnesty International that have been really interesting ones as well.
And what was the outcome of that investigation?
Somali Inquiry?
Yeah.
Well, it was, it set up the whole Somalia Inquiry, and, you know, I mean, people were fired, there were a lot of sort of direct consequences.
Yeah.
Probably the most significant was the hit the government took. But I guess I have to think whether I was at, maybe I was at UVic at the time when I was appointed to that. But it was with, there were five of us, three generals, an Air Force general and Army and Naval, one from each of the forces. And then two independent ones, a law professor from the University of Montreal and myself.
Right.
So we went, we spent 5 weeks in Somalia and then had hearings in, I guess, Ottawa and anyway, when we got back. But it was a major report that we did,
the
whole Somalia affair. That was fairly hair-raising.
Yeah. So you also, you mentioned that you taught at UVic. What subjects did you teach?
Well, I went to UVic as vice president.
Okay.
Excuse me, mixing up too many things.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
Stephen Toop got me to come back here as vice president. I was director of this something called the Institute for Dispute Resolution there.
Ah, I see.
And I taught mediation, I guess, mediation course.
And was that within the law school?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, IDR, the Institute for Dispute Resolution, was within the law school.
Right.
Yeah.
And so how did it come about that you got that offer from UBC after retiring from politics, I guess?
I was in Ottawa. No, I was still in Ottawa.
Oh, you were? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Stephen Toop and I had both done work for, I guess, Affairs, or I'm trying to think whether it was Amnesty International or Foreign Affairs, but
sure.
No, we'd both done, huh. Sorry.
That's all right.
We had both been engaged by Lloyd Axworthy to look at, he was doing his foreign affairs review. Damn it, sorry.
That's all right.
He appointed, it was China. Anyway, he appointed Stephen Toop to do one aspect of a, oh, no, no, it was Castro, that's what it was. When Lloyd was foreign affairs minister, he had this famous incident where he'd actually gone and had lunch with Castro, and it was as things were starting to liberalize a bit, and Castro was getting the end of his regime, and he took on a review, a federal government review of Canada, Cuba relations, and he appointed three people to look at two different aspects of it. That's right. Stephen Toop was dean of law at McGill at the time.
Okay.
And he was asked to do, he was looking at, I was looking at criminal justice. He was looking at legal education, maybe, or legal professions. Anyway, and so, and we both went and did separate trips there and reports, and we met over that.
Right.
That's what it was.
Okay. So he remembered you from that.
Yeah, and we had met a few times in Ottawa on things. I'm trying to remember. In any event, he, when I decided to leave you, Vic, I was doing some other things, and basically, I'm sorry. I was in Ottawa then. When I decided not to run again, when we were, I ran in 2004, 06. In 06, we lost government.
Right.
So I was sitting in opposition for a year, which wasn't that much fun. And frankly, I was looking to do other things. Oh, and it looked like there was going to be a fourth election within a year because Stephen Harper's first government was a minority government.
Right.
And it looked like it was going to fall. And so at that point I decided, well, I'm not a politician, I'm not going to do a fourth election in, you know, what it would have been less than 8 years.
Right.
And so, and Toop and I had been, he'd come to UBCI by then, we'd met before when he was McGill, and that's right, we had been, when I was in Ottawa, he came to UBC, he came to see me as his MP, because I was the MP for UBC.
Okay, yeah.
And I'd come and see him in Vancouver when he's my largest constituent. And and we started exchanging papers that we'd done over the years on different international work.
Right.
And so when I decided not to run for this, or to, when we were in, to stay in opposition, because it wasn't just sour grapes, because there was a minority government that looked like another election.
Yeah.
When I announced I wasn't going to run, he contacted me and said, well, let's have a chat.
Mm-hmm.
And he came and saw me in Ottawa, and I came and saw him here. And it happened all very quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how did it feel to be back at UBC?
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was great fun.
Yeah.
No, and, you know, this is our town. We lived here, and we still lived here.
Yeah.
So, no, UBC was just a breath of fresh air.
Yeah.
I mean, Ottawa was fun, but it was.
Sure.
So so he gave me this wonderful job.
Right.
This external legal and government relations, really. Community relations or something. Anyway, head government law and sort of society.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just a wonderful job. It was, had the Downtown East Side Legal Clinic and Robson Square, and just had government relations. The whole law firm at UBC is spectacular.
Yeah.
And I got to know Hubert Lai, very well, of course, Jerry Compton.
Sure.
He is a fabulous lawyer. It's great to work with here. So it was just great fun coming to you.
So as we start to wrap up, do you have any advice you'd like to share for law students who might be listening?
Well, you can look at the practice law in obviously many ways, but two ways of dividing it are either to become more and more specialized, and many aspects of the practice of law require, you know, long experience and repetition, and you know, you get better and better and better the more you know and the longer you're at it.
Right.
And that's immensely important. Another way to look at law, and the way I've always preferred things, not just law, but in a career, is to sort of go up and go up and go up and go up and up and broaden your experience horizontally, not just vertically.
Right.
So I think for law students, and there's so much to law and there's so much fascinating about it, you can take it, look at it in many different ways, but those are two ways to cut it. And so, you know, more and more expertise in a single field is a wonderful way to practice.
Mm-hmm.
But the potential for law being relevant to so much, certainly a public policy, yeah, history, international affairs, it can accommodate the widest possible interest. So it can really be a specialist degree, or it can be maybe the best generalist degree as well, because you can apply legal principles and legal reasoning and legal expertise in the widest possible range of fields.
Right.
So in fact, it's almost nothing. Go into medicine, and the whole medical legal field is just going crazy.
Yeah.
And my advice to people who are interested in legal principles and potentially practice, it may be that you'll want to limit yourself because you're fascinated by a particular field right up, you know, to start with, and you want to get better and better and better at that, and that will fascinate you for your career. Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
We need that. Or it might be that it's just as a generalist degree, you'll find it relevant to a whole range of things you might do.
Yeah.
I certainly found that.
Right.
You know, that it's been a good basic discipline for almost any field.
So any final thoughts that you'd like to add before we conclude?
Stick with law. I should be asking you more about your project, where it's going to go.
Well, hopefully we're going to keep building up these interviews. You know, we're trying to diversify and get different career paths. So you definitely stood out as someone who's done a lot of different things. So it's good to have you on the record.
Okay. Well, pleased to meet you.
Thanks so much for your time. Okay.
Great. Bye.